Howdy, and welcome to the River Talk podcast, hosted by Zach Collier, Priscilla Macy, me, Eric Weissa. This week, we wanted to talk about rowing. We want to talk about kind of all the different ways, skills, things to do, not do, just kind of go over the general gist with hopefully our resident, or not quite resident, but certainly the person we call expert, Peter Fox. But first, we'd like to get into news of the week. First news, Priscilla is not going to be on the pod this week, or at least doesn't look like it as of now, because she's off doing Priscilla stuff. But Zach, do you have any news of the week?
Well, just some event stuff going on right now. Boatsmith just happened. Today's Monday. It finished yesterday. And I didn't go, but I saw some photos, and it looked like, you know, great flows, great weather, like the ideal Smith River weekend.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed that my trip to Southern Oregon was like a week early, because it would have been really fun to go to Boatsmith, but I just couldn't make it happen. But yeah, all the photos and everything looked like it was prime.
Yeah.
And like basically as good as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, when you go to the Smith and it's like this, you're just like, this place is a mecca. I will come back for the rest of my life. And you're going to come back next year to low water and rain. You know, yeah. It's rarely this perfect, but when it is, you like are searching for it to be that perfect forever. It's so special when it's like that.
It's like hitting the Illinois at perfect levels when it's 75 out. It's like a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah. Yeah. You feel very fortunate. And it gets burned in your memory. You know, my very first time on the Smith was that flow, that weather. And I will never forget the feeling I had. And that got me to come back year after year to high water, low water, rain, snow. And not that many times that were perfect. Like, we're going back to the Smith. It's going to be so fun. And it's just like torrential rainstorms, or we're huddled under tarps, and then we're sleeping in puddles, and get up at 8 to go do the North Fork put in, and you know, everybody's sopping wet at the put in, and it's low water. I've done a lot of trips there where it's raining and low water, like the worst of both worlds.
That's awesome. What else is anything else? Any other news?
On the festival topic. The next festival is the Wind River Festival. The Wind is a river in Southern Washington. It's a pretty challenging river. It's like class 4+, Eric?
I mean, it's super flow dependent, I think. So it's like 4+ until the water goes up.
Yeah.
And then I think the difficulty climbs pretty quickly with the water. It's sort of been my, you know, maybe not to like super rowdy, but it gets pretty freaking rowdy if the water gets high.
I think dangerous. I'd call it dangerous at high water.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, if you swim in high water, you really need to have safety around you. We had this talk with Jeff Compton about the Wind a couple episodes ago, and Jeff was talking about a two-boat trip at high water. And I kind of questioned it. I'm like, man, if you flip a raft at high water, you just can't rescue 5 people. You know, you need a lot of safety. But I'm digressing. The festival, it's a great river. It's challenging for you that are solid class 4 boaters. It's coming up March 14th, and it's just like a day of races. There's R2 racing. We usually do cataract racing. It's just a good time to
assuming enough cat rowers show up.
Yes, assuming enough cat rowers show up. Last year there were 3, I think, that raced.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't think any worse, so I raft raced. But I'd love cat racing. It's head-to-head, too. This is head-to-head racing. So, you know, a bunch of cat boats smacking oars for the first mile is super fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a cool event, for sure.
Yeah.
So, I will miss it because I'm doing a woofer renewal that weekend.
Well, I'll be there.
Unfortunate for me.
Unfortunate for you. I'll be there as long as the water. If the water's high, I don't think it's safe. I'm not going to go. But if it's, you know, what I think is a safe level, I'm stoked. I'm excited about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Other news, this week is the Idaho Outfitter and Guides Association annual FAW. They call it a gala, an auction. And one of my employees sent me a text yesterday asking why it's a gala if you don't have to dress up, to which I responded that I have no idea. I don't even know what gala actually means. But it's a gala that you don't have to dress up for, or at least you don't have to put on something that you don't dress up for. It's Idaho formal.
It's Idaho formal. Like cowboy hat and cowboy boots are Idaho gala.
Yeah, exactly. So, and Peter Fox, who hopefully will be on this episode, and Mark Kramer are going to be presenters talking about some of their adventures and stuff. So it's going to be really cool. And there's tons of auction stuff, and there's going to be some screaming. There's going to be some really good deals to be had in the auction. So if you're a boater and you're in Boise and you want to hear some rad boating stories and probably get some good deals on boating gear, or you live in Boise and want to book a great vacation, there'll be some opportunities for that at this. So Wednesday, I think it starts at 5 o'clock, dinner's at 6 at the Riverside Hotel in Boise.
Yeah, what a cool annual thing that is too. Just an annual gathering of guides, outfitters, boaters, just to celebrate Idaho.
Yeah, it's super fun. So I always have a good time at that event. Cool. So this Wednesday, yeah. Well, should we move to our, unless you have any other news, let's go ahead and move to our topic of the week.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about whitewater rowing. Peter was supposed to join us. He's not here, so we can just pretend to answer for him or just do our best to cover some of these topics. And the reason I think this is an important topic is there's just so many different schools of thought about rowing, about what works, what doesn't. And I just like to have sort of a precursor that says, like, everybody, like, do you. Be you. If you have an opinion about something or a way of doing it, awesome. I love it. If you're looking to like try some new things out and to try learn about some different techniques or just maybe think about other ways of doing things, that's why we have these discussions. More just to like share concepts, ideas, so that you can be you out there in the boating world. And hopefully even maybe if we this is a chance for Eric and I to learn, you know, if we say things you think are just crazy or ill-informed or stupid, shoot us an email so that we know and we can discuss it on further episodes. You know, this is just our opportunity to share our thoughts about rowing based on our experiences. So that's kind of just, I just wanted to start off by saying that, because I think a lot of this can stir controversy and people, no, you never do things that way, when we're just talking about possibilities and having a discussion. Does that sound cool, Eric?
I mean, it's definitely the appropriate thing to say. On the inside, I'm saying, like, if you disagree with me on this, you're doing it wrong. So
yeah, well, we all think that. Like every boater who's boated from, let's say you're like your primary sport is paddling, right? It's different than skiing, right? In skiing, you go, you're always getting better, you're always taking ski lessons. There's always like guru ski instructors. In the boating world, you know, after you've boated for a few years and made boating your primary thing, everybody kind of sees themselves as a guru. It's kind of like raft guiding. Like every raft guide thinks of the ultimate raft guide instructor when there's no proof that they're particularly better than anybody else.
Yeah, so, I think there's probably some truth to that.
You know, there's no International Association of Whitewater Rowing that says this is how it should be done. There's no standard of like what's best. There's just sort of a conjecture among boaters.
Yeah, I think it's, well, I would argue it's probably because we don't have the competitive side that you have. You know, when you have ski racing, you have kayak racing, you have, you know, crew like rowing, all those things, when you have kind of really high end Olympic level racing as part of your sport, mm-hmm. people really spend time and refine and, you know, research and hone in sort of what is proper technique versus non-proper technique. And I think for us, we just have a bunch of dirt bags floating down a river being as lazy as possible.
That's true.
And so you don't have that necessarily kind of research and refinement and testing of different sort of skills and things to sort of define what is exactly the right technique like you have in some of those other sports.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think too that there's no way of objectively saying somebody is a guru. Actually, that's Peter texting me right now.
Speaking of the guru.
Yeah. Let me pause. I'll edit this back in. Let's try to get him on.
Muchos apologies.
No, no
How
problem.
How are you guys doing?
We're good. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm good. I'm great.
So, Peter, we started the podcast and then we started going down a road of like, we haven't talked technique much. We just sort of given it a nice introduction, like, okay, about gurus, basically, or how there's no gurus in rowing, so there's no set way of doing things. So I started off with sort of a diatribe about how Like, you, like, if you're a rower, like, do your thing. We're not here to tell you how to do things, but we're just here to have a discussion about rowing. Take it or leave it. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. You recording?
Yeah, we're recording. We'll probably just use all this.
Okay. Yeah. So, Peter, I guess Zach basically just said there's a. It's all, you know, fair, love, happy. You do you. I'll do me. There is no right when it comes to rowing.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, or is there a right and someone else is by default wrong?
So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at rowing. You can look at, you know, I think that it's fair to say for technique that that's probably, there's a lot of truth in that statement, but in terms of other things like, you know, the mental game, your focus and concentration, your ability to read water, how you read water, things like that, I would say that you could have more of a uniform way of thinking about it when you look at it from those points of view. If you're talking about whether to push or pull, use pins and clips or use open oarlocks, the answer that I've arrived at is that all of those things, it really depends. Depends on the river, are you rowing a cat or aft? Are you rowing a heavy gear boat? Are you in big water? Are you in tight technical water? There's a lot of different things that can depend or lead to the right answer for technique. But in terms of other things, what a good rower needs to do with their mind, you know, in their head, and what they need to do is sort of have a way of making decisions and a way of reading the water. I think all those things are much more uniform, you know, from technique to technique. Does that make any sense to you guys?
No. What do you mean by they're uniform? Like, there's a way we can all prepare mentally for rapids, and that's uniform?
I think I guess it's not everybody prepares the same way, but I think that everybody has to reach their own kind of decision about whether to run a rapid or not. This is something that doesn't come up if you're commercial boating the same river over and over again, and you're not making those kind of decisions. But for you do need to find a way to make a decision for yourself about whether you're going to run a rapid or not run a rapid in any kind of an edgy situation or something that pushes your own personal edge. And then in terms of reading water, I'd say things like, you know, how far are you? You have to learn to read water ahead. You've got to be able to pay attention to different things at the same time. You've got to be able to pay attention to the feel of your oars and the boat as well as what you're seeing with your eyes. There are some things like that that I think are pretty universal. Yes.
So here's how I'm thinking about this lately. There's a lot because I'm going to reframe this really quick. A lot of people ask me to if they can row a boat along the Illinois with us, right? Can they row their own boat on one of our commercial trips? And I'm just kind of scared, honestly, to have a lot of them row it. And they ask me, what do I need to prove to you? What skills do I need to have to row a rapid like Greenwall? Or the same thing for the wind. A lot of people around where I live here near Portland, they really want to row the wind. That's like a big test of their skills. And they're like, what do I need to know how to run the wind? And in my mind, I'm thinking about all kinds of stuff like, you know, being able to both push and pull and have good angles and do quick reflips. Like, what would you say? I guess I'm trying to guess, what are those skills you have to have to start running like tough class 4 or 5 rapids?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, you need to have a versatility of skills. You have to have a toolkit or tool bag or portfolio or whatever you want to call it, so that when situations come up, you can pull out the right tool to solve those situations. And, you know, if you're going to get into those kind of situations, I don't think it still depends, but I think you're much better off, put it that way, if you can both track and push as well as pull to catch eddies or do moves behind rocks with an eddy mover, downstream fairy angle. If you've got a broad range of skills and you have the ability to use them in a versatile way as situations come up, then I think you're better prepared for that kind of stuff. I don't know. I kind of agree with you. So you can't really say you got to be able to push, you got to be able to pull. I think that you have to have, a situational awareness and a situational bunch of skills that you can draw on, when they're called for. And in that kind of waters you're talking about, you just never know what's going to come up. You've got to have a bunch of things that you have that are ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zach, I think in some ways you're being kind to those people, because my response would be more along the lines of, I can't answer that question. You don't know you can do it until you've done it. And that's when you know you can do it. But if I'm going to go with you, the things that I'm really looking for are, one, that you have the experience and the judgment to decide you can't do it once you get there. And two, and probably, of equal importance, but really the ones that lead to success, is that you've got a deep enough bag of experience and skills that when plan A goes sideways, you can instantly go into plan B. And when that goes sideways, you can instantly go into plan C. That you're not going to get offline and freeze. Because the second you get offline and freeze, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Like when I teach rowing, that's the main thing I teach one of the main kind of mental things that I talk about is you're going to go offline. Inevitably, like when you're rowing rapids, you're going to go offline. And you need to be able to instantly move on to the next plan, not have to freeze, think about it, like ponder your options or sort of panic and not do anything. You need to be able to just, okay, next plan, next plan, next plan. Like, even if you're going the wrong direction, intentionally be going somewhere. Don't be along for the ride.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm looking for is, do you have sort of the skill set and experience to be able to on the fly wing it? Because especially when you're in whitewater like that, like you're going to blow your lines. You can have the skill set to run the line, but you're going to miss it sometimes. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And so I agree with that. I think having being able to have a backup plan, and that's, I think, comes from experience. But I also think I can boat with somebody and generally know if they have the ability to run something harder. Like I can watch them a little bit and think to myself like, oh yeah, they definitely have what it takes. I can't quantify that. There's no way for me to write that down. It's just like I feel comfortable with them and I'm seeing them do these things. If they ask me at the end of the day and they have the skills, I typically say, yeah, you probably can do it. But I also, don't want to take responsibility if I say they can do it and then they mess it up because I put them in that situation. Or if I know they can't do it, it's really hard to tell somebody like, nope, you're not good enough. That's not a fun discussion either. So it's a weird spot that I get put in sometimes. So I try to be as wishy-washy as I can. I can be wishy-washy until they say, hey, can we join a commercial trip with you and row our own boat on the Illinois? And that's where I have to say no a lot because I take on a lot of responsibility.
Well, excuse me, were you going to say something, Eric?
No, I'm just saying you do take on a ton of responsibility in that scenario, and that is, I agree. Yeah. Row your own. As someone who has 90% or 75% of our people paddle their own boats down the row, down the river, the difference between taking them out of an inflatable kayak and putting them in a raft with oars, like that to me is a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, that's true for sure. I think maybe what I would ask, the question you could ask them, Zach, is would you row it yourself?
A lot of them would, but
in a party. So, okay. One is you're an outfitter on a commercial trip. You're not running a rowing school. You're not teaching people to row, and you have a lot of responsibilities for your passengers and running the trip. So to invite somebody along on a trip like that, when they're potentially not able to row it themselves or don't have, when are you going to have to really take care of them? Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty clear cut no to me. you know, you got other responsibilities besides worrying about them. You've got to run a commercial trip. But the question, if they ask you a question like that, do you think I could row it? I would say, well, would you row it yourself? Would you, do you feel comfortable, you know, going out there with your friends, or, you know, in a team, so you're not just out by yourself, but would you go out with your friends and row it if you weren't going with a commercial trip, if you didn't have me and the guide, the Northwest guides, to look out for you? Because that's really the kind of people who probably could row it would probably have, you know, enough confidence or enough self-honesty to be able to answer that question, honestly, with a yes or a no. No, I don't think I'm ready. Well, then you're probably not ready to row along on a commercial trip. You have to work on your skills.
Yeah, I think what they're asking me, because they don't know the river. They've all watched videos of it usually. They want me to observe them for a few days and then tell them if they're ready. You know, they don't know. Maybe that's the answer. If they don't know, then they aren't ready. Maybe that's really what the answer is. Like, you have to be confident before you can run a river like that, or a rapid like Greenwall.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I think there's a certain amount of there's a level of kind of confidence that I think guides build at different speeds. You know, guides, rowers, rowing students, whatever, they build a certain level of confidence, you know, in a different time frame. Some people comes pretty quickly when they feel like they're ready. It's just like when with guides, some guides were, you know, ready really, really early in early years to jump onto some pretty hairy stuff. And some were a lot more hesitant to do those kinds of things. And you could tell, but they also, you could tell because they were hungry for it. You know, there was a certain, you know, a confidence and a hunger that built in some people where you just knew, okay, they're going to move up to try and do different water.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think the other thing I think about a lot is I feel like a lot of people that run, and I'm just green walls in my head right now, like you could probably push me off in a 14-foot boat and I could hold on to the frame and I'd probably make it down green wall. You know, there are definitely some moves there, but a cataract is so forgiving. You know, you'd be in for a wild ride, but, you know, you might be able to just bounce your way down a rapid like that and make it. And so people say, well, my friend so-and-so did it. And to me, that doesn't mean anything. Because, you know, in a raft, it'd be harder to get down green wall without strokes. But I think you can maybe bounce your way down without strokes, potentially in a cataract, and make it physically. Like, you push yourself out at the top, and you'll be in the boat at the bottom. There's a high probability. Like, it doesn't take – it could just be skillless, almost, if with a little bit of luck. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, what I want to see people do is have, like, a perfect run. You know, I'm a big fan of, like, just styling rapids and not having to go plan B, C, or D. You know, so I'd like to know somebody who is cataracting is going to go in and be able to be in control of the boat all the way down and not have to worry about all their backup plans. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I want people that to come on a trip, an Illinois trip, to know they're just going to style it and it's not going to be a worry.
Absolutely. Along the way. I think as an outfitter, you have every right to want that. You know, if you're going to let someone row a boat on your trip, you know, you want someone who's going to bring something to the party, who's rather than someone that you're going to have to look out for.
Yeah. So this makes me think of something else. Sorry, we're on like other tangents than I even planned to talk about. But I've been watching videos of like modern cap owners lately, and I'm noticing not modern cap owners. Like, I'm not talking like Mark Kramer and people like that. I'm talking even more modern cat rafters, the newest generation. A common thing is they'll take a few strokes into a big rapid and let go of their frame, or let go of the oars and grab their frame. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that, like, letting go of your oars and grabbing your frame is an accepted practice?
I mean, if you're pouring off like a big drop and just trying to stay on your boat, you know, like you've rowed in, you've squared up, and then you're grabbing on just trying to, you know, not get thrown off your seat, that's one thing. But if you're just like lining up at the top and grab it on going for a ride, that doesn't seem like a good deal.
It's fine, but it's not rowing.
Yeah, there you go. by by actual definition.
And if you're, what you just said, Zach, you're a big fan of Styling Rapids. I think we probably all are. You want to get in there, and you want to do what you can to really run it. You know, find the seams, get to the best spot. You know, surf across whatever it is, so that you're actually, coming in with an idea of how to run it, and you're running it that way. I guess if it's just a crazy drop, like, Eric said, you just hang on, right? I know Dave Nissen has told me that, Dave Nissen, who boated a lot with Mark Kramer, said, I kind of was one who would let go of my oar sooner than most and hold on. And, there's a lot of, in good catarafting, there's a lot of gymnastics. You have to really be able to move around that frame and put your weight where it needs to be. In rapids, it's much more active scrambling around in a cataract than it is even in a raft. You have to really be able to move around. It's part of the technique, I think. But I don't know. The holding on seems to lack a certain amount of aesthetic to me.
I totally agree. I'm just noticing as a trend lately, all of a sudden people are just grabbing their frame and maybe rowing the first half of a rapid and then just letting go of the oars and holding on to the frame.
Speaking of cat boating and frames, I got a question for you. So it seems to me that there is a sort of design difference that you see between a lot of kind of steep Idaho cat boaters and what I would say is like the more Oregon cat boating community, where they're positioning the rower on the frame. So it seems like a lot of the Idaho setups I see, you're really far forward. Like your seat is either dead center on the tubes or forward of there, versus the kind of more traditional, what I think is like the Oregon setup, where maybe your oar towers are kind of like almost right middle of the boat, or just a hair forward with your, somewhere, the middle of the boat being somewhere between your oar towers and your body, where it seems like you're a little further back. I have a hard time understanding why you would want to be that far forward, but it just seems to be a trend.
I know.
Is it to help climb over holes or something like that? Like, what's any ideas on why that is?
I have an idea, but Peter, I'm sure you do too. I'll let you go first.
Well, I just talked to Alan Hamilton about this, and he's one of the owners of, Al Hamilton, right? Yeah, he's one of the owners of Air. And he also I just found out recently he was on the first descent of the North Fork of the Payette in 1987. And so he's got some pretty good credentials because, they were in boats then that were the Argonauts, really flat, cat tubes, no kick to them at all. So he's kind of seen it all. He believes that if you enter a hydraulic, and do you want your weight forward as you hit that pile at the backside of it, the reversal? Do you want your weight forward so your momentum carries you, so your weight's up in there and you can get your oars into the downstream water, or do you want your weight farther back where, as you hit that pile and it slows you down, your center of gravity is going to be dropping you back down into that hole? And, he's a big guy. He's like 6'5" or something, but he said it's, he made it sound like, duh, there's no question. I think they run pretty crazy rivers in Idaho, really. The stuff that they run is pretty, it's not the commercial rivers, but the level of a difficulty, especially in with high water in the springtime, that people do take cats down in Idaho is pretty impressive. And so I think they want that. That's one person's opinion, from Alan Hamilton, who's really lived through the entire cataraft era and builds them. That's his opinion. So, and that's what he thinks. So,
Alan's an absolute legend in terms of boating and being a founder of Air and an owner of Air. So
yeah.
That means a lot. I think it's because the test pieces in Idaho are the South Fork of the Salmon and North Fork of the Payette, and the test pieces in Oregon are the Illinois and the Wind. So in Idaho, on like the North Fork of the Payette, you're pushing a lot through laterals and big waves. And so it's more of a forward pushing maneuver. And the same thing with South Salmon. A lot of those rapids, you're just plowing through laterals. There are a lot of pushing moves. And so that, because you're doing that, having your weight farther forward allows you to push through these things and plow through big waves and holes. The style of the Illinois at low water, more, well, even high water, the style of the Illinois in the wind is more of a like a pushing and pulling, like dumping momentum, back ferrying, maybe a downstream ferry once in a while. And I think that that style matches itself to being in the center of the boat. So I think it depends on the type of stuff you're running. If you're running the boats where the weight's in the very front, which it's really fun to do too. It's really fun to be in the front of the boat. It's very sporty. It's really hard to downstream ferry like that. And it's also really hard to keep an angle and do a long ferry. Like those boats, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like when you're in the front of the boat, it doesn't track really well. It turns really easily, but it's hard to keep an angle. Where I think on like the wind, I need to like go down the left side of a rapid, get an angle, and I need to pull all the way to the right with an angle and go down the right side of the rapid. Where on the North Fork of the Payette, you're just pushing through things all the whole day long. So I think the boats match the style of the rivers.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Can I go back? Just this is kind of close to what Eric was just talking about, the idea of people, or you were just talking about, Zach, people just hanging on. Are there, you can't just hang on. You can't just row a little bit of a rapid on the North Fork of the Payette and hang on because of its continuous nature. You have to keep rowing and making moves, and that's why cataracts used pins and clips far longer than a lot of other types of rafts, because they just need, you know, if they get thrown around or flip and have to reflip, those oars have to be right there where they can take a stroke immediately and not have to get their oar back in an oar lock. You know, that kind of very continuous, intense rowing, you know, where were you seeing the holding on type of stuff? Is it more pool drop type of rivers?
Yeah, more pool drop. You know, the one that comes to mind is somebody capoting double drop on the green truss. So capoting the green truss is generally a bad idea, right? Let's just all agree that's a little too difficult for capoats. But going into double drop, which is, Eric knows, it's just like, you know, like a 20-foot total drop, but it's double tiered, and just rowing up to the entrance, letting go and holding the frame and going through this drop and then celebrating at the bottom, right? Like, so seeing it there.
On that one, there's no space really to put your oars anyway. Like, you're dropping your oars because the river's as wide as your boat is.
You could ship your oars. You could ship your oars. It might take, but also, I think that the thing too is because there's not space to, if you're literally just going, like entering a rapid and holding on, that rapid wasn't meant for a capoat. You know, like you can't effectively maneuver the boat to make that rapid. You're just basically rolling the dice. So for me, that's why I'm like, it's probably not a good idea to capoat the green truss if you're just going to hold on to your frame the whole time. The first time I did the Middle Fork of the Feather, one of the capoaters did the same thing. He just would row the entrance and let go of his oars and just be fodder. And luckily, capoats are pretty forgiving. And he did okay. And my mentor back then, she was like, you don't do that. She's like, Zach, don't ever be like that. So my whole career, I've been very careful not to do that. I've seen more examples of it.
But double drop is not a capoat rapid.
Yeah.
But it feels like there's probably a lot of other rapids on the truss when there's enough water in there that actually would be really fun.
So when I capoated,
do you knock off a whole run because there's like three rapids that really are just stupid in a capoat?
You do, because there's more than three. Like Bob's isn't exactly clean in a capoat either.
And or anything.
Double drop. Big Brother, Little Brother. You know, there's a lot. And the put-in's hard. So when I capoated it, I portaged all those big ones, or I lined them and portaged them all, right? Because I was like, there's just no skill that goes into this other than just holding on. But I guess my point is I'm just seeing that more and more when I watch videos. And it could just be me noticing. I'm just noticing cat boat videos, you know, capoeiras, they row until, you know, they're not rowing anymore, then they're just holding on.
Okay, I have a thought of that. I have a thought on that, which is, okay, so, you know, what is the right reason? You know, well, there's a value judgment right there. What is the reason you're rowing a river? Are you rowing a river to test your skill, or are you rowing a river to check the box to say, I did that? Are you rowing that rapid to say, check the box, I did that rapid? Or are you out there because you want to learn and you want to improve your skill and test your skill? And to me, the holding on thing sounds a little bit more like it's in the check the box category.
So I guess my goal of bringing this up, and Peter, I agree with that. Thanks for bringing this down to reality, is that I feel like I don't want younger boaters to see people let go of their oars and grab their frame and think that's a valid technique. And I don't want to be judgmental. If people want to go like run crazy things, like be you, awesome, have fun. What I worry about when I bring it up is I feel like it's bad form, and I don't want the class three boaters to look at that and say, oh, I'll just row the entrance and hold on to my frame, because I don't want that to spread. So that's why I'm asking it. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I would just give the answer I just gave. You know, it's what, you know, it's, I think that, you know, why do you go out there? You're out there because you're trying to test your skill. You're trying to become, you know, better and you deepen your relationship with the river. You know, how can I cooperate with these hydraulics I see in front of me in such a way that with my oars and what's going on in the water, we can create something together, kind of thing. And if you drop the oars, you're sort of letting go of that, you know, relationship aspect, if you will. You're more just saying, okay, I'm just going to hang on and let the river, you know, have its way with me.
Yep. All right, I want to move on. I've hijacked this podcast enough today with my crazy off-topic discussions. There's an actual question I wrote down that I want to talk about, and that's fairy angles. And Peter, you and I have talked a lot about fairy angles that you need to have to get across the river. And I had some discussions about this recently. And one thing I learned from you that I've been thinking about a lot lately is rowing 90 degrees to the current. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, Zach, we both rode on the Tuolumne. The Tuolumne, you know, is a riverbed that's kind of carved by however many, you know, eons of water going through there. And so the riverbed sort of has its own natural intelligence of where the water is going to go. So it's a great river for what I would call riding on the current, just getting in the front of a rapid and letting the current take you through a technical move. And
that doesn't make sense to me at all. Like, I'm thinking of a rapid like Nemesis right now or Stern.
Can't do it in those rapids. Yeah. But there's a lot of places. Okay, anyway. Cool. All right. So let's scratch that. So let's, if you, you know, the, What we tell rowing students is, you know, if you're entering a rapid and you get on the current and you're riding in the current, and you look downstream, and you don't do anything, if you don't do anything, is that current just going to take you where you want to go? And that's the first kind of question to ask yourself about what I would call letting the current just carry you through a rapid. I'm sure you guys are both very familiar with the times you can happen when you can do that. And then there's times when you have to make a lot of moves in a rapid and you can't do that. You've got to do a lot of different things and shift from thread of current to a different thread of current and, you know, go around rocks but when you're riding on the current, if you get to a 90 degree angle and you're pulling sideways, you are still riding at the speed of the current. You don't slow down or speed up at all. You're just, if you're a real 90 to the current, you can maneuver sideways without losing that downspeed momentum. So you can, and it's a way, say you're riding in a piece of current and there's a rock straight ahead of you. If you've got an upstream fairing angle, you know, you when you start rowing at that angle, you're going to be slowing yourself down. You're going to lose that feeling of the juice of the current underneath you. And yeah, you'll make the move. But if you get to just straight 90, you can stroke and it hardly takes any effort at all. And you just glide across and you're still moving downstream in that with that great feel of the current underneath you. And then you just sort of straighten yourself back out and you can run past the rock without ever losing that momentum of current that you're riding in. So I guess it's a move. The 90 degree is a move where you can actually you're actually maneuvering at the speed of the current. You're not either slowing down to be slower than the current or speeding up to go faster than the current.
Eric, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think that that's right. Like coming out of a drift boating background, which is where my rowing started, you know, the big technique was point at what you want to miss and pull away from it. And you're in this really light, fast, hard bottomed boat that, you know, you can pull against the current, really slow the boat down, go where you want, you know, similar to like a cat boat. You can really slow down and go slower that you can go slower than the current if you really want to and work your way around the river. But the second you get into, you know, say a 14 and certainly anything bigger than a 14 with gear, with any kind of gear in it, like on a multi-day trip, anytime you're pulling against the current, you're more or less just wasting energy. You're not actually really going to slow the boat down. Or if you do, it's not much. And you're not going to, if you're wanting to go across the river, you're not going to get there very fast. You're going to work your ass off to do it. So I'm always a big believer. And if you're in anything that resembles a decent sized raft with anything that resembles any kind of weight, you know, you should be pulling across the river at, you know, at most, right? Like otherwise you should be aiming downriver with your back end and pulling, or at least across the river and pulling. But if you're aiming upstream and pulling, you're probably, you did something wrong at some point to be in that situation. On most multi-day kind of trips.
So Peter, you brought this to my attention. Like, I don't know, yeah, what, 6 months, a year ago, we talked about it. And I think I poo-pooed it. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And I've thought about it a lot since then. And mm-hmm. I realized I do it all the time. Like, I probably think I'm at a fairy angle, but I actually am at 90 degrees. Like, I think I've put a lot of thought into what we talked about. And I think you're right. We're at 90 degrees a lot. And I was telling somebody this the other day, and they told me that's not technically a ferry, right? Because you're not at any angle of the current.
Well, okay. So the term ferry angle comes from the types of ferry boats that used to be a Parrott's ferry on the Stanislaus and Ward's ferry on the Tuolumne and all over the rivers in Idaho, where you have a rectangular boat suspended by a cable that you turn at 45 degrees the ferry has to be in a place where there's current from bank to bank. So you have a block and tackle attached to that cable that can change the angle. You just put that ferry at a 45 degree angle and the river carries you across. And then you get to the other side, you know, unload your prospectors with their mules and their gold or whatever, and then turn the boat back to 45 and the river will carry it back across. If you want to get a strict definition of a ferry angle, it's a 45 degree upstream angle where the deflection of the current against the boat will push it across the river. But I think in common usage in river rafting, that what we do now, a ferry angle is any angle you take to the river, whether it's 0 degrees or 180 degrees or 90 degrees or 17 degrees. And, you know, so we call them all ferry angles now, even though, you know, by strict definition, only an upstream 45 is an actual ferry angle.
That's interesting. Because I was going to propose we come up with a new name for it, for 90 degree ferry, just because it's technically not ferrying. So like downstream ferrying is downstream ferrying. That makes sense to me. Then upstream ferrying is upstream ferrying. And I'm going to claim that 90 degrees is just there's actually no ferrying involved. It's just its own thing.
You're moving across current movement. You're moving across the river, right? Isn't that what a ferry does? Is move across the river?
I mean, that's a ferry moves you across the river, but because you move across the river doesn't mean you're ferrying.
Huh. Well, I don't know. That's sort of semantics. I think that a 90 degree ferry angle is the most efficient way to move across the river because none of your energy is fighting the river at all. you're just, you're all of your energy, 100% of what you do with your oars is moving you across the river.
Yeah. So I'm with you now. I'm with you. I get it. I've been thinking about this a lot, but there is, just for the listeners, there's one huge advantage to this, right? Do you guys know what that huge disadvantage is?
Yeah, the downstream oar.
Yeah. So when you're 90 degrees to the current, your downstream oar could easily hit a rock and then pop you in the head or pop out or break or whatever. So yeah. That's, I think that's the big disadvantage.
Whoa. Like, that's a bit of an exaggeration because that, like, can you do that? Yes. Do you have to do that with your downstream oar? No. Like, it just takes being intentional. It is, to Peter's point, it's the easiest way to get across the river. But there is a skill set involved with it and sort of situational awareness that comes with it, like anything else. You just simply have to have it in your mind that you don't want to crab your oar. And if you can do that, there's no reason you should crab your oar.
What do you mean, like, crab your oar? Do you mean, like...
I mean, catch it on a rock that's downstream and then have it snap on the downhill side of your boat. Or come back and smack you in the face, or... All the things that can go really sideways when that happens.
So if you're in shallow water, water, use the very surface of the water.
I would say when you're in any water, be very aware of your downstream oar and how deep it is.
I would suggest, Zach, that it's a habit. Again, I'm going to go back to the fact that you and I both learned to row a lot on the Tuolumne. Yeah. It's a habit. You know exactly where your downstream oar is at all times. And I can get a good stroke in an inch of water if I have to. Yeah. You know, you have to increase your wavelength. You got to hit the water more times, but you can get a stroke. And it's just something that to me is second nature to pay attention to that downstream oar. But that's taken a while to get there, you know. But yes, you have to be, the danger of the downstream oar is definitely there when you're at 90 degrees. The other thing that comes up when you're at 90 degrees is you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position to wrapping too.
Yeah,
if you miss a stroke or something goes wrong, you know, there's risks to it, it feels so good to not lose the downstream flow of the current and to be able to move across it, to not fight against it
I think you guys, I like expending the energy. Like, I don't mind working hard. Like, I think you guys maybe are lazy rowers and proud of it. I don't mind fighting the river a little bit. I don't mind slowing myself down, taking my time, like picking the rapid apart. I don't mind it as much.
I think lazy is one word. I think finesse might be another word.
Okay, finesse.
Efficient.
Efficient. Yeah. I would say I'm a less efficient boater. I don't mind putting some strength out to fight the current a little bit.
But it depends on what kind of boat you're in though, too, Zach, right? Like, if you're in a 14-foot boat with no gear in it or a 12-foot cat or something like that, absolutely. If you're in an 18-foot boat loaded with 6 days worth of gear, and you have to get to the bottom of a long technical rapid, you know, you're focused on doing it the most efficient way so your arms don't fall off before you get to the bottom and you don't wrap on something halfway
down.
But
it depends how technical it is. I learned on the Tuolumne in 16-foot gearboats going through rapids like Rock Garden where there's no efficient way around it. Like, you're pulling, making moves, or like rapid like stern, or, you know, they're very technical rapids. So these are very tight moves. You can't just like slide across the current back and forth because there's just barely enough water to float you a lot of the time. So I think that highly depends on the river you're doing. I think that's where I come from, is that Tuolumne background. So I'm always trying to, I don't mind fighting the water. I learned by fighting the water.
Yeah. I think it's a technique you want to have. I think, if you're going to go on the Illinois, it's a technique you want to have in your tool bag. You're going to want to be able to, whoa, I got to put on the brakes here. I need to both be slowing down and moving across the river at the same time right here. It's not, you want to have that.
Whereas you're right. If I'm on the rogue rowing a heavy gear boat and I'm tired. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I'm just like as efficient as I possibly can be.
Yeah.
Because I can be, but I think there's times when you do need to fight the current a little bit.
Well, here's an interesting, go ahead, Eric. You got something you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, on the, just bringing up the Illinois, one of the ways that I think is fun to be able to kind of slow yourself down, because you're right, there are times you have to be able to slow down or whatever. And the Illinois is a great example of a river where, you know, you can utilize sort of the flow of the river to help slow yourself down. Like, I like kind of dumping into holes, you know, or small holes, or half dumping into a hole.
Yeah.
You know, as a way to put on the e-brakes a little bit, going down the Illinois. Like, it's great, efficient, lazy versus trying to slow down.
Scrubbing off some speed.
Yeah, I've been I'll hit rocks. I've been slammed, like, hitting the wall a little bit.
I can't do that.
Like, lower, let's say, Little Green Wall, the rapid after Green Wall, which is actually, to me, more problematic than the Green Wall. At low water lately, I've been running the bottom at the right, and you have to make this move from the right to the far left. So I'll hit the right wall, dump momentum, and then pull to the left.
Ooh, smart.
In the green wall at low water, or medium water, if I take that far left door, you know, if you miss the move there, you go down to a place that does it, like it's a dead end street. So I'll hit the left wall and kind of scrape down the left and dump momentum, so I can pull back to the right.
Hmm.
So I've been hitting rocks a lot for that. Well, but same idea, using like the rocks or holes to dump momentum.
That's a pretty modern technique. They, you know, to use the rocks. I always like to use the water. But here's an example going back to when you're talking about that conversation of liking to pull against the water. Zach, you and I are both pretty big guys. You're a really big guy. I read a lot about the women who first broke into rafting, and you know, some of them are, you know, 130 pounds or whatever, not big, and they went down and they started rowing snouts for Arda on the Grand Canyon in the early 70s. And the snout's a 22-foot boat with 13-foot oars and, you know, a couple thousand pounds, because they put six passengers on them. And you know, you think about the Grand Canyon. Those women had to learn how to row without fighting the water, mm-hmm. and row the Grand Canyon and miss the eddies at the bottom of the rapids, get through the eddies and catch the eddies for camp. There was a school of rowing that really was driven by women, and all over the West, starting in the 70s, but particularly in the Grand Canyon, and in particular with those snout boats, where they had to find another way. There was no choice. And what came out of it is they ended up teaching a lot of men new ideas about how to row, because they really used the water and really, you know, had to stay online, had to read so far ahead and stay online and never get off their line, you know, and read the water coming into the rapids so that they were already using the water to take them to their entry point. So all of those kinds of skills were, you know, were not something that was a choice. And they were apparently some pretty incredible rowers. Hmm. So it's, you know, I think, you know, it's a big, big dumb galoot like me who has to learn the hard way, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think I make up for skill and strength, which is nice.
Yeah.
Is there what's an example of a lesson we could learn from the women of the 70s do it? Is there something where it's like some lesson, like always point this direction, or always, is there some like lesson, or is it just sort of passed on through experience?
Absolutely. Read the water as far ahead as you possibly can at all times, including coming into the rapid, not just when you're in it. See as far, you know, read the water that leads into the rapid, so you're using the current to your advantage to get to your entry point that you want to be at. And then always read as far ahead as you can. And you have to really have laser focus. You have to concentrate. You can't lose your focus. You have to really pay attention very closely at all times.
One thing I say, tell me if you think this is along the same lines. One thing is I say a lot is like, I'm not running the river where I am now. I'm running the river 25 feet ahead of me.
Great.
Like I'm physically
absolutely
here right now, but I'm trying to build momentum and speed now to solve the problem 20 feet ahead of myself. And my mind is 20 feet ahead of myself. I'm already, my mind passed the place that I'm at that moment.
Absolutely. And this kind of goes back to the first thing I said when you asked me about skills. I think the one thing that the couple of things that are I think are a little bit universal is if you want to have rowing skills, learn to read water as far ahead as you can. And two, the mental game or the perceptual game of it, you have to I would bet, Zach, that when you're reading water 25 feet ahead, you're not just using your eyes. You are feeling the current where your oars are down in the water. You're aware, the inner gyroscope in the middle of your body is aware of the movement and the angling of your boat and the sliding, whether you're sliding on current and sitting in current. So you have a multi-sensory input that you are paying attention to, and your peripheral vision is working for you. So there's a ton of input coming in that is a skill that I think is something that really, you know, is a next level skill for river running, is be able to let all that input come in and be able to just sit back and understand, you know, you're almost feeling the water 25 feet ahead of you because you know it so well, I think, you know. So that's, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, and I think that's why I love rowing. You talked earlier about, like, do people row to, like, check off a box or because of the feeling or enjoyment. I think when I'm rowing river at my level, I'm in this, like, state of flow where, like, all my senses are at once Absolutely. Being utilized. Like, being in that flow state feels so good. So you're just, like,
so good.
You're, like, able to control where you're at now. You know where you're headed. Your mind is, like, taking all these inputs and solving problems. It's just like an amazing feeling to row like that. And I love that feeling. I'm always searching out rivers that can provide that feeling for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Perfect. That's well said. I love that feeling.
So I think we're getting near wrapping it up. I don't know if you have more questions, Eric, but I have one more thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, you're talking about, you know, learning to read water. Like, how do people learn how to read water? Like, I honestly believe all you can just do is practice. Like, I don't think I can teach how to read water. It's sort of, you learn from experience. Or Peter, do you think there's some way that you can teach reading water? Or Eric, what do you think?
Well, I think there's two kinds of reading water. There's a reading water you do with your boots on the, your boots on the shore. That's a whole different world than reading water in a boat. And I think what I'm talking about, what you and I are talking about right now, is reading water as you're flowing down a river.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think it's not just reading. Reading is kind of a term. When you say reading water, I think we all mean something more than just using our eyes. I think we're completely involved with our body and our hearing and the feeling of the wind on your face. It's a very multi-sensory experience that's actually reading water, you know, and it's, you know, I would say just got to really paying attention and really trying to practice looking far ahead. And then after that, I mean, you're going to learn, you know, like you and I can probably just, as our eyes scan, you know, 100 feet downstream or 200 feet downstream, we can just see a little edge of a drop and read whether we know that's going to be smooth or there's something we need to come back to and look more closely when we get a little closer. You know, those kind of things, you just have to learn to read the language of the river, you know.
So, but how do people learn that? Like, is there a way that you could teach somebody that? Or is it, like I said, is it just go and do it and you'll get better the more you do it?
I mean, you can give them tips. No, I think you got to do it. I think you have to do it. And you know, some people just pick it up right away. Some people just look at a river and it makes sense to them, you know, and some people have to learn it.
Eric, what do you think?
Well, I think it's like learning. I think it's like learning to read anything, right? Like, so learning to read English, you are taught sort of the fundamentals and how they all come together to make words. But then you practice it. And the more you practice it, the better you get, the faster you see it. You know, the more you can skim a line and you'll see all the words and understand all the words without even like reading them all. You learn it. And I think it's the same way in the sense that, you know, people can teach you the basics of like, if you see the water doing this kind of convex thing over a hump, like here's what's going to likely be on the backside of that. Or, you know, like you can teach people the fundamentals but they have to go out and do it and be in it enough and experience it enough that they'll start to internalize that. And, you know, now it's like you were saying, you go out there, you can't not see it. Like, you look at a piece of river and you see all of the things, you see all the consequences, you see the way to go, and you do it instantly because you've been out there so much. It just becomes kind of part of you. And that just takes time. It takes time and doing it. Following, you know, an ideal world, following other people who are really good, who will kind of help guide you through that maze. And over time, you'll learn by following others who are good what it is that they saw and why they went where they went. And you also learn by screwing it up and realizing, you know, why you didn't want to go or what the signs were of why that wasn't a good place to be.
I ask this because I think about a class two or three boater who wants to run a harder river. Like, you know, I feel like I get this question a lot. Like, you know, like, this comes back to this, can I run the Illinois question? Like, how can people improve? And it sounds like reading water is important and you learn that from practice. Does that sound like the answer to that?
Yeah, yeah. All right. Here's the metaphor I would use. It's like, if you walk into a room full of strangers, or say that your pastor's come off the bus on your river trip and you're trying to learn their names, and you look at it. So that guy's got blonde hair. Oh yeah, that guy's got this mustache. Okay, she's got this, you know, she's got this funny hat, you know. You look at just really characteristics of those people that, you know, will quickly stick in your mind so you can remember their names, right? But you can't. But then as you get to know them, you start to be able to, you know, they differentiate themselves. You can really see their different faces. And then if you have somebody like your wife or somebody that, you know, that your best friend that you've known your whole life, you can look at them and just a little crinkle at the side of the lip, yeah, and you know exactly what they're thinking. You know, the slight lift of an eyebrow and you know you're in trouble, you know? Yeah.
So I think that helps me. I'm just like thinking about this a little bit, and I one of the struggles I think with rowing is that there's not always a good progression of rivers where people live, right? Like here in Oregon, you can work yourself up to, you know, you can do the Clackamas, and then it's a pretty big step from the Clackamas to the Wind. There's not like an in between, and so you can do the Clackamas a lot and catch every eddy. And you have to just go over and over and over. And at some point, it's a fairly big jump up to the Wind. You know, there's not like a exact perfect progression unless you're willing to travel a lot and drive to where there's water. And I think that's one of the struggles people have with advancing and rowing is there's not like a perfect do this and then do this and then do this and do that. It's like go to the same river 50 times and if you don't love it enough to do the same river 50 times, you're not going to put in the reps to go run a harder river you might want to do. You know, the struggle with the Illinois.
I would add to that, and that.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, you're assuming that it makes kind of an assumption that there's one way to run a rapid too. You know, you go out and do the same river 50 times because there's probably 15 different ways to run each rapid. Mm-hmm. You know, you can run this line over here, that line over there, that line over there. I mean, it's there just because there's one obvious way doesn't mean that that's the only way. And that's part of learning to read water and see what the other alternatives are.
Be playful. And yeah, part of the fun.
Try different boats. I think different boats helps a lot too.
Well, as I was thinking about that, because I thought this conversation would come up, one of the things that I'm a big believer in, and again, it comes from our sort of inflatable kayaking background, is I actually think the easiest way to intro people into running rivers is actually inflatable kayaks. Because you're down low, the skill set from a paddling standpoint is pretty low. Like, it doesn't take much to learn how to sort of paddle yourself down the river. It's a real low skill set. It's pretty natural feeling. And you're in a craft that is very sensitive to different, you know, different currents, what eddies are doing, what waves are doing, what laterals are doing. The boat is very sensitive to it. And so you're feeling the river and you're not so focused on like the skill set of doing something that's kind of unnatural, like rowing. Mm-hmm. You can go feel the river and pretty quickly just start going down things, but you have to be able to feel and read the water because it impacts you so sort of, the impact is so much greater in this little tiny craft. So I actually think for learning to read water, jumping straight into inflatable kayaks is probably the best place to start. And then move up to rowing, where you can focus on this rowing skill set that's kind of unnatural and weird, but you've already started to sort of see how the water comes together and where to go.
I think the one, I agree with you almost all the way with this, Eric. The one issue with inflatable kayaking is you're almost always going forward. And so you're never going backwards. So you're never, it's like pulling on the oars. You're always pushing on the oars when you're kayaking. And so I what happens, right. I'm getting in these discussions about pulling versus pulling online, which I'm hoping to get out of soon. And some people saying, oh, you got to pull, you got to push. Pushing is the way to go. And that comes from like a kayaker background. And so my only caveat to that is that people who practice by inflatable kayaking just be cognizant that like you're learning it a little bit different. Like you learn how to read water really well, but you're sort of reinforcing this idea of going straight through rapids all the time. When rowing and rafting, I think that slowing down momentum and pulling sometimes is a good method too. Does that sound fair?
I think he's talking to you.
Am I crazy here?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's three different conversations, yeah. But I see the connection that you're making to sort of building an idea that, you know, your control is all through downstream momentum, with your, you know, facing downstream. I see the connection. I think it's kind of two different conversations in some ways, but
yeah,
I see your point.
But I'm with you. I love inflatable kayaking. As you know, I do it all the time. And, we the first 20 episodes of this podcast, it was like an inflatable kayaking podcast because we were just so geeked out on it. And I just had memories of the first time I saw an inflatable kayak, and I was like, wait, what? That's an option too? I get to sit in this little floaty thing and paddle down rapids on my own? Like, I never, it was like a little boy just so excited to get in that thing.
Hey, when will this podcast be aired, Zach?
Today.
Can I put in a plug for the anybody who lives near Boise to,
yes,
to come to the Idaho Outfitter and Guides Association fundraiser Wednesday night in Boise, because
no, you it's can't.
It's a good cause, and you're gonna get to listen to Mark Kramer, who has thought through all of these things to a level of detail that most of us could never even imagine. And then, and you're also going to have to listen to me talk, but the bonus of listening to me talk is that I went back into my archives and I have some pretty incredible images of the Biobio River at high water and from the first ascent of the Futaleufu that are really, really cool images that, you know, are, It's like looking at history with the boats and the seeing that river, that Futaleufu, like we saw it for the first time, but also seeing the Biobio, which has been underwater for 24 years, and that's a spectacular river.
I'm super excited for this. Like, I'm very excited. So I'll be there Wednesday night for sure.
Oh, I look forward to
it. It's going to be great.
Yes, you can put a plug in for that.
I'll think about it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to make it, guys. I'm really sorry. Are you, Eric? Are you guys thinking about videotaping it maybe and having put it on online like the Idaho Outfitter and Guide Association YouTube or something?
Aaron and I had discussed it. Whether or not that's coming to fruition, I am not sure. I will check and get back to you. Let's put it this way: if it is a thing that can be accomplished, I will make it. I will make sure we accomplish it.
All right. I think a lot of us would love to see this. I mean, what a special treat to, you know, hear Peter and Mark talk about all this boating. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Mark is amazing. So I think Mark's going to present a lot of information that is super valuable and super interesting. So be a videotape of that. I'd love to look at a videotape of that. So
yeah.
Anyway, so hey guys, I got to run here.
Yep.
Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun again. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay. All right.
See you Wednesday.
All right. See you. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Eric, you want to finish up the gear of the week?
Yeah, Zach, what do you got?
I don't have anything. I thought I had something, but, you know, because I had surgery in December. I haven't paddled in like a month now or 2 months. Actually, it's been 2 months. So I don't go do things that much. So I have nothing exciting to report. What do you got?
Honestly, I'm sort of in the same boat. It's been kind of a, I got nothing for today. Man,
our gear of the week.
I got some things coming up.
It's getting weaker and weaker every week. But, well, hopefully it's boating season soon and we'll get out and play with new life jackets. Actually, I do have gear of the week. I think I said this one last time. Actually, I'm pretty sure I did, but I tried on that new Kokatat life jacket, the PFD, the Hustle.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about this?
No.
It's incredibly comfortable. That's all I have to say. Like, I tried one on. I don't own one, but I tried one on, and the foam is pre-curved, and it just fits your body amazingly well. It just, in 10 years, we're going to have the best PFDs ever. It gives me hope for the future of comfort and PFDs.
Nice. Well, that's exciting.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
You have to go find one and try on.
Yeah, cool. I mean, if you need a new PFD and you don't mind only having 16 pounds of flotation, just get one. It's worth it.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I got no gear of the week, so there we have it.
Cool.
So, thanks to everybody for listening. If you're in Boise or Boise area or within 10 hours there and are looking for a reason to drive to Boise, come Wednesday night and see us at the IOGA fundraiser. Otherwise, get out, run some rivers, and come back and listen to us again next week. We'll have Priscilla back, hopefully.
Hopefully. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, email us. If you've gotten this far on the podcast, which I will be shocked if anybody has made it this far, it's email us at questions@rivertalkpodcast.com.
Or comments. We're perfectly happy with, comments. You don't need to be a question. You can just tell us that we're wrong and leave it at that, whatever you want.
Yeah. I heard this thing recently. I think I might have told you. There's no conversation without disagreement. So if we were just always, if we were always agreeing with each other all the time, and there would be no podcast.
I think that's true. It's really the differences that make it worth listening to.
Yeah. So, all right, well. And then other people giving us, and a few listeners too, giving us things to, when you disagree with us, you give us things to talk about.
Yeah. All right, well, until next time. Looking fine. Gonna flow me into a new state of mind. I'm on Chattahoochee on the Rio Grande, the Allegheny.
the new quiz up today, so check out the website for a link to the new quiz, and I'm excited to see what people say. So, yeah, thanks for joining, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Cool. That was a good one. We even had good audio, except for that one hiccup. The audio quality was amazing.
Yeah.